Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owlpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing. And with me, as she is every single week, the stupendous Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Hey! Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. I feel like this, the year is just starting to kind of really fly by. It's just been a little bit crazy, so maybe it'll be good that 2020 is finally leaving, but who knows what 2021 has. At this point, I'm never going to say anymore, man, I guess I'm just ready for next year. Nope. I don't know. I don't know what next year has, so I don't know if I'm ready.
I will say the next recording, so not this. So when this one goes live, everyone, when this one goes live, my daughter will be 3 years old.
Wow.
I cannot believe that that's happening. So that's kind of, I'm not so much the year is flying by. I'm more like, man, I'm old. Because all of the years have flown by. And I would love for this one to wrap up. I know 2021's not going to be, you know, like sunshine and rainbows now. But I am ready to like make a clean break with the 2020. But we've still got a quarter of the year to go. And a national election here in the U.S. So there's still plenty of opportunity for lots of things to happen.
Just when I think you can't get any worse, you go and do something like this.
I know, right?
You know? It's not totally redeem yourself, so.
Yeah, it's not time to breathe easily yet. It's been a tough, tough year. And 2021...
It's been a hard day's night. Yeah.
So. Yeah. It's like that 30 Rock quote where she's like, man, like it's been a year. And he's like, it's February or something like that. It feels like that. Like, man, it's been a hard year or it's been a hard decade. Nope. Just 2020.
Yep. Pretty much.
We've still only been through 1 year of the decade.
Yep. Nope. It's been a century, hasn't it? Right. So. Oh, goodness. Well, we're excited because we're at Chapter 16, Godric's Hollow, here in the Deathly Hallows. So excited to get into the chapter. Before we do that, of course, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Of course, you can even find us now on Amazon Music, their podcast section. So Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you know, hit us up with a star rating review, too. If you're on Apple Podcasts, let people know what you think of the show, help people find the show. We'll read your review out when you do. You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. You can find us online at thenerdparty.com. You can also go over to the contact section and send Drea and I an email if you would like. And so, Drea, this is an interesting chapter because we're at a place where we're going to really move the story forward very quickly. But this chapter is one where... it's kind of more set up to that happening. And it is really interesting because the whole beginning of this chapter is really Harry and Hermione having to figure out how to live without Ron and the frustrations that come with that, the hurt feelings that they both still have. And specifically for Harry, dealing with the ramifications of some of the accusations that Ron made against him and actually feeling like himself that some of those are true, like Dumbledore left me with nothing, I don't know what to do, like, and so it is, I would say, one of the most melancholy chapters that we have in this book, because it really is these two characters dealing with the emotional fallout of losing Ron.
Yeah, it's a very, I don't want to say moody because I don't think that's the right word. It's a very heavy, emotionally charged chapter from start to finish, right? Because we start, like, to your point with sort of Ron's departure, and Hermione is taking it super hard, like super duper hard. And so is Harry, right? Just in very different ways. But yeah, I mean, he makes good points. Like, Ron wasn't completely wrong, but at the same time, you have to ask yourself, like, okay, well, what was he supposed to do, right? Like, what else is there? But I think it's an important, you know, he takes it as an important thing. It's a good call to feedback, right? We all get lots of feedback in our lives on how we're doing and what we should do better and worse. And when we miss a mark, and we don't always get the feedback when we hit the mark and things like that. But, you know, it's good to, like, take stock in how much value is in that feedback and also be able to reject some of it, right? And that's kind of what he does, is like, you know, yeah, that's the point. And he'll wait. He kind of waits around to see if Hermione has the same, and she doesn't. So he's kind of like, okay, we're gonna go with this. All right. And, you know, but I think it's an important thing we all can do, is take that feedback and decide from it what we should focus on and take stock in, and what we can kind of let go of.
Yeah. And I thought what was really interesting to hear in this chapter is that they get so kind of morose in their feelings, that they bring out the portrait of Professor Nigelius so that they can have someone to talk to. And they're also trying to do it to find out information. And what they find out and what they're able to glean from him is that at Hogwarts, Snape is having this kind of low-level amount of mutiny coming from some hardcore students, which Ginny seems to be the ringleader of, with Neville and Luna. And what was fascinating about this is that as Hermione is dealing with the loss of Ron, this information is hitting Harry quite hard because he is really yearning to be back with Ginny. And he is frustrated that there's nothing he can do to help them, right? And so it's like, you've all, like you said, this really is a chapter of feelings, and there's just so many different competing feelings that both Harry and Hermione are having. It's no wonder that they're just kind of in this funk. And then you add on top of that, you know, they have no idea where to find the sword. They have no idea where to find another Horcrux. And so it's a hard chapter to read, because they're in a place where they don't really have any answers, and they can't really seem to help each other or anyone else at this point, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think it's important to know that even those people we see in our lives, like, you look at people who look like heroes and everything seems to come so easy to them, it's important to know that they still go through the same things we do. They still want the comfort of a warm bed and a meal and to see their loved ones. Like, just because they do things that are hard doesn't mean it's not hard for them, right? And I think Harry is just experiencing that, and then has a moment where he's like, well, nope, there's a 10,000 galleon hit, you know, bounty on my head, and setting foot in Hogwarts is like setting foot in the ministry nowadays, so none of this is going to happen. But it's very human of him, and very real and authentic, to like have those desires and yearning, because for those of us who say we don't care, that's not really realistic. Like, we do care. We do want those things, even if we can't have them. And it's important to sort of acknowledge those feelings and then move past them, just like he did, right? I felt them. I felt the yearning. Okay, I'm going to put them in check and focus now back on the realism of where I am and what I can actually do and actually accomplish and what I actually should be focused on, which is what he does when he finally sort of does talk to Hermione and sort of approaches it. They both clearly have spent some very thoughtful, deep time thinking about their next steps.
Yeah, I really like this, because Harry approaches Hermione and he's trying to have a conversation with her, and it was very funny, because as he's trying to have a conversation with her, she has some questions for him, and one of those questions is that she sees this mark in the Tales of the Beetle Bard, and she has not been able to find it in the syllabary, so she has no idea what the symbol is, and they realize that they've seen this symbol before, and that it was Luna's father was wearing this symbol. And Harry remembers that Crum called it Grindelwald's mark, and recounting that story about that. And she says, well, it seems kind of odd that, you know, one, Luna's dad would be wearing it, but then would Dumbledore have put it in his book, his copy of this? And wouldn't, if it is a dark mark, like, wouldn't Scrimgeour have recognized this when they looked through the book? So they kind of end up in this place where they really aren't sure what to make of this whole idea, because there's a, I mean, it's just a ton of conflicting information, honestly.
Right. I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where, like, it's still this puzzling thing that they just don't quite understand. And I do like, we get a little clarity here when Hermione's like, I've never heard of Grindelwald having a dark mark. Like, I've never heard of him having a symbol associated with him. And we know from her extensive history that she's probably done quite a bit of research on this, and that if anyone were to know, if anything were ever documented, then, you know, it would be her. And so it makes you question, because we don't really doubt Crum and the theory behind that, but we also don't really doubt Hermione. So now how are we going to reconcile these two things back together and say that makes sense? Marks are going to come up again later in the chapter, right? This very quick, brief, emotional chapter, but it's going to come up again.
Well, and this is the moment where, as they kind of reach a lull in that conversation, Harry is able to kind of get to where he wanted to go with Hermione, which is, I want to go to Godric's Hollow. And she says, yeah, I really think we have to. And he's like, wait, did you hear me?
Like, and she's, are you like, sure? Oh, are you sure?
Yeah.
Because you fought me so hard on this last time.
Which is phenomenal, because it's a funny little moment here. And this is where their funk, in some ways, begins to abate a little bit, because they begin to have this conversation. And Hermione talks about her reasons for wanting to go there. And she talks about this idea. Obviously, Godric's Hollow, maybe that's where Dumbledore hid the sword, because that's where Godric is from. And Harry's like, really? She's like, have you never read History of Magic? And she even pulls out the book and she quotes a whole section about these wizarding towns and how Godric's Hollow is the most celebrated in Britain because it's the home of, you know, Godric Gryffindor, as well as Bowman Wright, who was the wizarding smith who first forged the Golden Snitch. And so, and that its graveyard is full of ancient magical families in the church graveyard. So, like, this is a place that Hermione thinks that they should go. And then Harry puts it together. Wait, Bathilda Bagshot, we know she still lives there. What, maybe they put it together. Maybe that's who Dumbledore left the sword with. So they actually have a really good reason for visiting, as they've been able to kind of throw all this information together. Of course, Hermione won't let them go except for the safest way possible. So they decide that they're going to use Polyjuice Potion. And so they have to steal some hairs from a muggle couple's clothes so that they can turn into them, and then they apparate to Godric's Hollow.
Yeah, it's smart, and it's smarter than what they do in the movie, because they don't go through the trouble of doing all that in the movie, and they seem to be a little more cavalier about it. It seems riskier in the movie.
It's pretty dumb.
Yeah, it's pretty risky here, to be honest, but yeah, I mean,
it's a little bit different when you're literally somebody else. I mean, yeah. So,
but what's interesting is what comes to happen afterwards when we think about this, and we'll talk about this in kind of the next chapter. They make it to Godric's Hollow, and they start looking around because they have no idea. They've never been here. They have no idea what they're looking for. They have no idea where they're going. They just kind of start looking. Right? And Harry even says something like, any one of these homes could have been his home. Any one of these homes could be where Bathilda Bagshot lives. Like, they don't know, right? It could be any of it, for all he knows. Which we come to find out is not the case at all. But we're at the point where he literally knows nothing about any of this. And they start looking around, and they come across a cemetery. Actually, they come across something else before they come across the cemetery.
Yeah, it is really interesting because what they run into is they run into a statue to his family. And it's a pretty moving moment because as Harry is here, what he is realizing is the life that he could have had. The life that's gone, the life that will never be. And of course, seeing the statue to him and his parents there is a pretty moving thing. It's basically a war memorial to what happened. And it's sad. There's so much feeling in this chapter. I also think it's so interesting because this is kind of the moment too where they realize it's Christmas Eve and they've totally forgotten. They've missed it, you know. And it lets you know just how much time has passed in this book now. You know, we started there at the end of July and now we're already at Christmas. And it's been a frustrating run for them. And so as they make their way into the graveyard, they find the grave of not only Kendra Dumbledore, but also her daughter, Ariana. And there's a beautiful inscription. This is another moment where Rowling begins to tip her hand a little bit to some things that she's going to find important throughout the rest of the story. But I love the inscription. Is that, you know, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And it is something to which we will completely understand much more later on as to why that's the inscription and why Albus would have picked that later on. So it's going to be, I'll prepare you folks, it's going to be a sad story.
Pretty much anything from here on out is going to be a sad story, folks. Just hang in there. Yeah, I do think it's interesting though, his Harry's response to all this, right? He sort of tells himself he wishes he hadn't found their graves and he hadn't stopped because it's sort of tainting his excitement for being in his childhood home. And it's really this interesting sort of sorrowful approach because he also relives all of the things his life could have been if his parents hadn't been killed by Voldemort, right? He relives like maybe I would have had friends come over to my house. I could have had brothers and sisters, and it hits you. Like it hits you where it hurts, right? And it's a lot to think about all that sort of unrealized life and potential. It's really hard to process and we grieve it for him here because he's probably never had an opportunity to truly grieve his life and his parents. And it's sort of a roller coaster. Even when he does find his parents and he's standing there looking at their grave, he has a pretty, I don't know what the almost morbid approach to it. Like, I don't know that they're in the ground. Like they don't care that their son is living here. He almost has a moment of like survivor's guilt, right? Like they don't care that I'm alive and that I'm here because they're dead. Like they can't care. Right.
Right.
And it's kind of in response to something that Hermione shares from their tombstones, right? From their graves.
Yeah. Because it says the last enemy that shall be destroyed is death. And Harry doesn't know where these words are from. And, you know, for him, Hermione mentions, you know, what they're referring to is the idea of life after death. And Harry's like, there is no life after death. And it's something that's really fascinating because this is a moment where, you know, for those of you who don't know, that's a quotation from 1 Corinthians 15 in the Bible. It's verse 26. And so, but Harry doesn't know this. And so he doesn't understand the ramifications of what it is that his parents have put on their grave. And it is something, though, that we have had in the series where we can see the difference between, the difference between Dumbledore and Voldemort. Voldemort has done everything possible to not die because he believes that living is the only thing that matters on this earth, right? And Whereas you see the complete opposite and difference in like Dumbledore, who is somebody who is willing to sacrifice his life for somebody else. He's willing to die because he's not afraid of death, you know, whereas there is a fear of death with Voldemort. And so Rowling has said this whole series is about death and how to deal with death. And so this is really a big part of that, because Harry is trying to figure out, how in the world do I deal with my parents' death? He doesn't know how. So I find that fascinating, and I love that this is going to be something she will continue to explore the rest of this book. Like, this is kicking off something that will play off to the very end of the series. So
that's a lot. And then I think we skipped over it a little bit, so we're just not going chronologically this time, which we haven't gone chronological for a while, y'all, so bear with us. But they also found the symbol on a gravestone in this cemetery. And they were able to make out the first name associated, which I also think is different than the movie. I think in the movie they can make out the full name, or they can only make out the last name.
Yeah, they can make out the whole thing, yeah.
But it's on there, and they don't... Harry is so sort of overwhelmed and over it and everything that they don't really spend much time thinking about it. And I do love the beautiful moment where, you know, Hermione, you know, creates the beautiful Christmas wreath and they lay it down on the graves, and then they kind of turn and comfort each other as they leave. It's this very sorrowful, beautiful moment of just, they know there's something to say, and all that Harry needs is just some physical like touch. I mean, there's so many studies showing the impact of physical touch, and I can't even imagine in the COVID days how much of that we're missing. But you know, there is something to be said about a hug having a physical response, and she knows that that's kind of the only thing he needs at this point. So they just sort of, I don't want to say cling to each other, but they just sort of like come together and then go on the rest of the way together. And I think based on the way we start this chapter, with Harry feeling like Hermione could also pick up her roots and run like Ron did at any given time, I think this ends in a way that gives him a little more reassurance that she's there, she's in this, she's not Ron, right? And she will be there for him in a different way, right?
Yeah.
So I thought it was a beautiful like moment to end on, even though it was incredibly sad.
Yeah, because, you know, the next chapter, we're going to get to Bathilda's secret, and so we'll have to wait till next week to see what that is. But no, I mean, wrapping up with the idea that, you know, we see the symbol, we get the name Ignotus, and then we are at the grave of his parents. And it's what's fascinating to me here is that the two tombstones that we go to, both of them have Bible verses on them. So
that we can make out, yeah. Two that we can actually read.
Yep.
Have some sort of religious connotation to them.
Exactly. Which is really interesting. And so it's one of those things when you kind of think about it, you know, we don't have a ton of religion in Harry Potter, but we do have at school, they celebrate Christmas, and they get off for the Easter holiday too. So it's not as though it's abnormal. It's just not something that Harry himself is aware of, you know?
Yeah. Religion is not existing in the religious sense in the world. It's all mostly inferred to the reader through references.
Mm-hmm.
Are familiar with the Bible, if you are religious, if you're spiritual, if you share a lot of those beliefs, you pick up on the motifs, but they're also not like, they're not to the extent where they also beat you over the head and you're like, oh my God. Don't take this the wrong way. This is not like Chronicles of Narnia, where it very clearly mirrors a religious motif, right? They're in there and you can infer them, but they're not the main driver of the storyline.
Yeah. I mean, she is much more subtle.
Yes.
In that sense. And so she's much more like Tolkien than she is Lewis.
Yes. Yes. So, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Thank you. That's exactly what I mean. I don't mean to offend anyone out there or bash C.S. Lewis. I know that is a very popular writer, and there's a lot of people who like that in this fantasy realm, right? It's in kind of that same young adult fantasy space. even my husband's uncle is like super obsessed with C.S. Lewis. So, yeah, but I think it's just a different approach, right? You're right. It's just much 100%. More subtle.
Yeah.
And you can see it or you cannot see it, right? You don't really have to accept or reject it. It's just there if you choose to go with it. It does get, you know, we do get some more of the traditional Judeo-Christian themes as we finish up this book, I think. Especially one of the big incidents that happens near the end that I'm not going to spoil, and I'm going to stop talking so that I don't ruin it for anybody. I'm like digging
myself
a hole.
Trey's just
going
to give you the rest.
Give me the shovel. I'm going to keep digging. I'm just going to tell you the rest of the story, y'all. I'm going to do it Olaf style. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it's also sort of appropriate because it's a graveyard, right? And a cemetery and a final place of resting generally has to do with your ultimate beliefs, which generally fall in the religious category, right? Like, especially when we talk about the inscription on Harry's parents' tombs or on their graves, right? It directly correlates to that whole afterlife thing. And so I think this is also the most appropriate place for these scriptures to show up in the book.
Yeah, that's a great point, because in all honesty, what you believe about life after death has a major impact on how you live your life, you know? So, yeah, to have these things be here means something. And so it's going to be so much fun to dive into them as we get further into the series. So, Drea, before, though, we get to the next chapter, where can everybody catch up with you if you want to hit you up on social media?
Are you sure you want me to keep talking? Are you sure I'm not going to like dig myself a hole trying to share my Instagram?
I mean, at this point, it can only be about your own social media, so
so there's I guess the it's risk okay. is yeah. low. Okay. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's CoffMan.
And you could find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero under the name @Wrestling02. Also follow the 602 Club, which is the handle there for the show I do over on the TFM network about all things geeky. And of course, you can find the podcast, the 602 Club, as well as doing literary treks over there and The Orb with Chris Jones as we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine and the books and comics of Star Trek. And then here on the network, I'm doing Aggressive Negotiations, the Star Wars podcast with John Mills, as we talk about all things Star Wars. It's been so much fun. In fact, right now we're going through every single episode of The Mandalorian, doing a commentary for that as we wait for season 2. But thank you so much for checking your Owl Post.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.